Welcome to the Higher Intelligence Podcast, brought to you by My Working Soul. In today's episode, Generational Shift, we explore how diverse perspectives in the workplace drive positive change. Each generation brings unique experiences, yet we all share common goals and aspirations. As technology changes how we connect, we have a chance to bridge cultural and generational gaps. Platforms like LinkedIn help us share our stories and build meaningful connections. This empowers us to engage in new and impactful ways. By embracing open communication, we can create a work environment where everyone feels heard and valued. This season of Higher Intelligence features insightful conversations with guests that I've connected with on LinkedIn, including today's guest, Amy Smith. Join us as we explore how storytelling and content creation can unite us, fostering a more inclusive and innovative workplace that thrives on collaboration and understanding.
I always valued hard work. It's probably because I grew up really poor. When I was young, I was short-sighted, and I worked hard only to get what I wanted. But over time, when you work for what you get, rather than having it handed to you, it changes who you are. It begins to define just not what you do, but who you become, who you are. And whether I've succeeded or failed, as it turns out, I've owned that. It mattered not who was president. It didn't matter how much the tax rates were. It didn't matter what happened to other people. You create your own experience. And I still believe in this country. There is no other country where a poor kid with an alcoholic father and periods of being homeless and living on the street can achieve the kind of success that I've enjoyed in my life. If I had one wish for some of the Gen Zers or just young people in general, even some millennials, who believe they should only have to do what they want to do, it would be this. Today will not last. It will change. So many want to be influencers, content creators, digital stars, but like I say, only a very small percent are ever going to do that. It's like wanting to be a musician or get in the NBA. You know, you better have a plan B. So being an entrepreneur, you know, I think the last job I had was when I got fired from A&W. I've kind of been in business for myself all the way. And if you don't want to work for somebody, sure, don't. Be an entrepreneur, but eating is a habit. And so you got to figure out a way to get along until you find out that thing. But you are the CEO of You, Inc. And you got to ask yourself, how's that working for you? Are you getting what you want? And the number one thing for me has been to do what I'm passionate about. And if you're not doing what you're passionate about, then you need to find out what that is. Because if you're blessed enough to do something you're passionate about, then your vocation becomes your avocation. You're now doing something you love.
Today's guest is Amy Smith, the visionary founder of Align Tribe and creator of the In Demand Coach program. Amy helps professionals leverage LinkedIn to share their stories and connect across generations. Her insights into personal branding attract top opportunities while fostering collaboration and understanding in our diverse workplace. Hello, welcome to the Higher Intelligence Podcast. I'm your host, Kareen, and today we are so excited to welcome Amy Smith, founder of Align Tribe, to the podcast. Amy, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Kareen.
Thank you. And I'm so excited to dive into more about you and your professional journey. To start, and just to educate our listeners, can you tell us more about Align Tribe and what you do for your clients?
Yeah, so I'm a business coach and LinkedIn marketing specialist. And so we work with emerging and established coaches, consultants, and professional service providers, primarily to help them really build their brand and grow their business using LinkedIn. That's what we do. Currently work also with executive teams and really helping them to navigate LinkedIn and get the most out of it for their own personal brands and also for their companies as well.
Absolutely. And it's so incredibly valuable what you do. And there's so much subject matter I want to get into. But before we talk a little bit more about your work, I'd love to take it back to the beginning. Was there something in your childhood that inspired you to pursue your business goals and dreams? Or was there something in your adolescence or in the past that really shaped where you are today?
Yeah, wow, going way back to childhood now. So I think, you know, I had a lot of entrepreneurs will kind of, you know, have this story of, you know, they were asleep on their, you know, sister's couch because they couldn't afford to pay their rent and they're almost going homeless and broken. You know, my story was definitely not like that. I had a very, I would say, ordinary childhood and, you know, had very loving family and friends around me. And I think from an early age, I always kind of had that entrepreneurial streak, if you like. So I actually started my first business when I was 12 years old. And I used to actually get all my family members to donate their old clothing and their old jeans. And I used to like repurpose their clothes. And I used to turn some of their old jeans into handbags. So I'd cut the legs off and then, you know, decorate it. And I would sell them to all my friends at school. And it actually got to a point where I asked my mum to work for me. I wouldn't pay her, of course, but I did ask her to work for me. And she said, "You're joking, like focus back on school." And so that was kind of, I don't know where that came from, because my parents, you know, at the time, my mum now runs a business, but at the time my mum was in the police force. My dad was always a workforce trainer. And so I never had anyone that was sort of in business that I grew up with in the family. And so that's sort of, you know, very early stage. And then, you know, when I went through my career, I did all of the things I was told to do was, you know, finish high school and go to university and get a good corporate job. And I ended up following the HR path through university and then really kicked off my career in executive recruitment. And so I did all of that for a while and, you know, was working with some great people, some great organizations in that space. But I always kind of had, you know, in the back of my mind, wanting to work for myself at some point. And so there was a period of time where I was working for an executive coaching and CEO mentoring company. And just through that, I got into the world of coaching. And then I was really passionate always about LinkedIn because I used it in my job every single day. I used to call myself a professional stalker where I was headhunting CEOs on the platform every single day. And so I had a lot of people that, you know, were asking me for career help and, you know, HR help and those sorts of things. So that's sort of how the business started. And it's always funny when you start a business because it's never kind of what you picture. And what you end up doing is kind of never what you start with sometimes. And so what it evolved into was, you know, a lot of people saw me launch my own career coaching brand at the time from my corporate job. And I used LinkedIn to do that. So I started to build my own personal brand, built up my connections to over 28,000 and was able to quit my corporate job within 12 weeks and was fully in my own business. And so then I had people in my network saying, "I've seen how you've done that for yourself. Can you now teach me how to do it?" And that's how the in-demand program that I do now evolved and got started. So I hope that's a bit of a journey for you right from when I was 12. But there's some of the things that I think when I look back and connect the dots that, you know, kind of got me to where I am now.
Absolutely. And it's so inspirational to witness, I call them the touchstones of someone's journey that got them to where they are today. And there's so much there. I definitely want to talk to you all about LinkedIn. There's some aspects of HR that I'm really eager to hear your insights on as well. You pointed to something that I think is so relevant for our audience to hear today, which is about the entrepreneur's journey, or the founder's journey is another way of terming it. And you mentioned about how your business evolved to be where it is today. And I'd love to hear from you more directly. What are aspects of the founder's journey that are not glamorous and that people don't always talk about? And this could be true for you in your journey or for your clients. Is there something that comes to mind when I say it's hard to be a founder?
Yeah, I think if I think about a lot of the people that I work with and support, you know, a lot of them have had quite significant corporate careers and they've hit a real high level of success in their corporate careers where they're kind of at that point of, you know, almost exhaustion. You know, they're at that point where they just really are wanting the flexibility of running their own race, doing their own thing, being able to utilize the skills and experience they've built up, you know, through the years in their leadership role to then perhaps become a leadership consultant or a coach for other organizations. And I think one of the biggest things that most people don't realize is that what made you very successful in the corporate space doesn't necessarily translate across to making you a successful entrepreneur. And so, you know, a couple of examples of that is, you know, in the corporate space, we have a significant amount of people around us all of the time, and we get to focus in on some of our strengths and our skill sets, and we don't necessarily have to delve into areas that we either don't like doing or maybe aren't our favorite thing or our strength to do as well. For instance, you know, if you're head of marketing, you know, you never really sort of touch the financial side in great detail. And it's very, very different when you step into those shoes of becoming an entrepreneur, because you are now responsible for everything. And so there are areas, particularly if you've, you know, been quite successful in a particular area, it can feel kind of weird and it can feel like you're just a total beginner and a total learner again in another area of business. But all of it is totally necessary. So I think one of the biggest shifts that a lot of people have to make is, you know, they're very good at what they want to do and they want to help people, you know, in their professional services or, you know, as a subject matter expert around their expertise. And it's kind of a little bit of a shock to the system when they know that they have to learn how to sell and they have to learn how to market themselves and they have to learn how to run the business as well. Otherwise, you know, you never really get to the level of freedom or flexibility that you truly went into business for in the first place. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges that I see, you know, and biggest realizations that I see a lot of people, particularly if they've come from that corporate space, there's a real sort of mindset shift that happens at that stage.
Absolutely. And to underscore your point further, I think it's so important to understand what the day-to-day reality looks and feels like in that experience when we're talking about, yes, you will be doing payroll, and yes, you will be the person knocking on the doors and possibly having the doors closed in your face. And yeah, it's a lot to handle. And I speak as a founder myself, and I'm going to start with my first controversial statement of this conversation, which is, I don't know that it's for everyone. What do you think? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's for the people that are willing to put in the work to make it happen. So I think a lot of the skills with entrepreneurship can be learned. So if you, you know, there's a lot of people that might not have a real proclivity to sales and marketing, or, you know, it might not have been something they've experienced before, but you can definitely learn it. It's just that you've got to be willing to put in the reps. It's like if you head to a gym and you look at all of the fancy equipment and you look at all of the things, and, you know, you can learn about all that equipment. You can research, you know, how to do a bicep curl, and you can do all of these things, right? But until you're actually there picking up the weights and doing the reps, you're not actually going to get the results that you're looking for. So there's a lot of people that I think kind of skirting around the edges of entrepreneurship. They like the idea of it. They like learning about it. They like researching. They like, you know, doing course after course after course, but never really doing the reps and implementing where they need to go because it's a little bit uncomfortable. And so I think if you are willing to do that and you're willing to try and you're willing to pick yourself back up again and try again until you get it right, it can definitely be learnt, but you definitely have to have that, you know, drive and motivation and resilience to get through some of the resistance that you might face in certain areas.
Absolutely. And resilience is a key word here that I particularly focus on. And I think it's also important to say that not everyone needs to be an entrepreneur or a founder. I'm totally going to make the case. Yeah. Controversial statement number two. everyone should think like an entrepreneur. That's my belief. Do I think that everyone has the financial well-being, stability, place in life at every point to jump into it? That's where I'm a little on the fence and I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe go deeper, do your research. And that alludes to another piece I wanted to talk to you about, Amy, because I mean, you're really incredible. There's so many different factors about you and your business that I could highlight. LinkedIn is a huge, huge focus on part of your value contribution, of course, along with so many other things. I think for a lot of founders and entrepreneurs that are in that overwhelmed state, to borrow a phrase, sometimes they are inundated, actually, usually on LinkedIn, they're inundated with so many different reach outs, messages of people who say that they're a business coach, say that they can help you get leads, grow your business. Some of them offer money back guarantees. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of bootstrap founders that actually really need that resource, it becomes so difficult to discern who will give you results, who's actually going to support you. And also, even if it's the most lovely person in the world, if it's the right resource for you and your business. So I'd love to hear your thoughts just relating to that experiential space and also highlighting what makes you different and why you are a great choice for that person who might be in that place.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. You know, it doesn't change no matter what stage of business that you're at, you know, and I think that there's always that unknown. And there's always, you know, I've heard it be said before is what I call the ignorance tax, where you're paying every single month a level of ignorance tax, which is simply because you just don't know that next step or you just don't know how to break through that next level. And so that's actually the first place to start, is really trying to figure out, well, what is the problem that you're trying to solve in the business right now? You know, is it because you don't have clients and that's really what's keeping you up at night? Or is it because you have too many clients and, you know, you need to work out some better systems and you need to put some boundaries in place for your time and you need to, you know, create a bit more of a life around your business? So I think that's the first step, is actually really deciding for yourself without anyone coming into the business to say, well, what is the problem that I need to solve? And what is that one problem that I know if I solve this, it has a flow-on effect to solving so many other things that I'm thinking of in the business. So I think that would be step number one. And then step number two, really, when I think about working, you know, with anyone, because I do this myself, you know, I've hired plenty of coaches and mentors and consultants throughout my career and through my business as well. And I'm always looking for that person that has gone and done what I want to achieve for myself, and doing it in a way that feels really aligned to me as well. So if there is someone that, you know, I've seen online and maybe they've had a lot of success in business, but the way they've gone about that is they've hustled from 4 a.m. up until, you know, midnight each night, and then they wake up and they do it all again. Like, that doesn't suit how I want to create my business, and that doesn't suit how I want to lead my life. So I think going to the people that not only have gotten the results that you're wanting to achieve, and you can see evidence of that from them actually out there doing it, but also they've gotten the results in a way that feels aligned to you and feels really authentic. You know, if you are someone that doesn't want to be overly, you know, doing the hard pitching in people's face, like, don't go for someone and work with someone that has that approach. You know what I mean? So it's really thinking about not just the problem and the aspect of the business you're looking to solve, but also the way you want to solve that as well.
Absolutely. And you're welcome, listeners. You just got a free bit of valuable advice from Amy Smith here. So thank you for that. I think it's, and this is what's interesting about coaching. And I try to pull back the curtain whenever possible too. It's that time and attention. And that's one piece of a coaching approach that I can really advocate for in terms of encouraging people to look at coaching in a different way and see where the value lies in it. Because another controversial statement, I think we're on number three now. I think a lot of people, you know, not necessarily the people in our circles maybe, but there's some people that hear the word coach and they think fluffy. And I use that word specifically because I know that you're very particularly a no fluff type of coach. But yeah, people hear that fluffy word and they think, oh, that's a waste of money. I'm not interested in that. And to give them a bit of a bolster in terms of that feeling, one thing that I noticed, especially during the global pandemic, COVID-19, is there was a huge shift for a lot of people into coaching. And there mm-hmm. started to be, in my view, a big confusion about what coaching was, what the promises were. And I venture to say, controversial state number four, that there were some people who really were not accountable or ethical in calling themselves a coach, at least not in my framework of what a coach should be. And what are your thoughts on that? Just thinking about the evolution of the coaching industry, the people who are calling themselves coaches, and also, you know, in the back door, so to speak, talking about your process and why it's so different compared to that fly-by-night approach.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, the reality is that we live in the digital online world now. And I think COVID really sort of exposed us to that fact and kind of maybe threw everyone forward in that way, whether we liked it or not. And so I think we can't ignore what's going on in that the coaching industry is actually one of the fastest growing industries out there right now. And so what that means for a lot of people is there's a lot of opportunity because more people are really understanding what coaching is. More organizations are really knowing that they need coaches in their organizations to help their leadership team or to help people in their careers as some examples or working with their executives. They're actually starting to really make sure that that is just mandatory. You know, it's not like a nice to have anymore for a lot of organizations. So there's huge opportunity in that. There's also increased competition, which is what you alluded to as well. The harsh truth and the reality is that it actually doesn't really matter how experienced you are as a coach or whether you've got a list of qualifications and things behind your name. It's actually the ones who are winning are the ones that really know how to put themselves out there in the right way. They're the ones that know how to market themselves. They're the ones that know how to sell themselves in the right way as well. And so there is a level of frustration for a lot of people who, you know, have really invested heavily into their career as a coach to see all of these, you know, it feels like every day there's probably a new coach or consultant that's popping up in your space. And the reality is that people are going to work with people who can help solve their problems. And people are going to work with people who they are aware of. Unfortunately, in today's world, you can't sell a secret. And so for a lot of us, this is actually sort of, it should be sort of fuel to the fire, really, to make sure that you're the one that's being seen and you're the one that, you know, even, you know, I'm sure the clients and the people in your inner circle that have worked with you know how great you are. But the whole aspect of this digital world and the world that we're in now is you need to actually have that same feeling for people that come across you on LinkedIn for the first time or hear about you for the first time. Like they should have that same impression. And often I find there's a huge disconnect between people who are amazing at what they do. They deliver exceptional results for their clients. They've been coaching for years and years and years. And then when you see them online and you look at their digital presence, it's almost non-existent or it's really not up to scratch with the competition that's out there right now. And so I think we can sit back and we can gripe about it and we can say, oh, this isn't the way it should be or get upset about it. Or we can just play the game that we need to play in order to make sure that we are, you know, growing and sustaining our business in a way that really works for us.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really empowering and positive outlook on the development that we're both noticing in this space. And I want to take a moment. I'm so tempted to go into LinkedIn because it's a hotbed of conversation, but I'm going to toggle over to the HR side of your expertise because one of the trends that I've noticed is that HR as an industry, as a profession, I think we're up to number five now on controversial statements, but this one has been said before. HR is broken, and HR is definitely evolving and changing. And within the niche of talent acquisition recruitment specifically, I've watched a lot of people leave that profession entirely to move into the coaching space. And I definitely see the parallels. It makes sense to me. And I'm curious to know if you've also noticed that. And also, to your point, given the historic talent profile of HR, what the traditional HR role has demanded out of the people that occupy these positions. Do you see that as a straightforward pivot to a coaching route for HR? Or are there some other, I'll call them other issues or other considerations that we might all want to think about as we're witnessing HR continue to evolve and change?
Yeah, I love that. So it's funny when you say that, and it's funny when I kind of think about it, because I notice that a lot of my clients have HR and recruitment backgrounds as well, who are out there in their own coaching and consulting businesses. And I think that was kind of a natural progression of the way I got started as well. And so it's interesting, right? Because there's, and I'm talking in completely general terms, I think it's always up to the individual, and everyone is different and everyone brings their own uniqueness to the table. But I think, in very general terms, people are typically drawn to HR roles because they have a passion for working with people and helping people. And I think that's one of the biggest links between, that passion, that drive to want to help people, as a coach or as a consultant, or to help organizations grow, to help their culture. So for instance, one of my clients, Winston, has a similar background, and he's out there now working with teams, helping them, build the strategy around their teams and their leadership teams for the way forward in organizations as well. And so I think there's a really clear link from a lot of people who have that experience sort of in-house working in corporate companies to then doing that for other businesses out in their own business. I think, again, some things to be kind of aware of, and again, just very, very broad terms, is that, HR roles were very much brought into, the compliance, and we're quite risk averse, and a lot of the things that we have to do within our roles is assess risk and is really look at two sides of the coin, both from the board and the executives and, the company and what serves the needs of the company, but also what serves the needs of the employees and the contractors and the freelancers and people that you work with as well. And so there's sometimes this tug of war that you can have between, being quite risk averse and then also having to take a risk as an entrepreneur, or maybe venturing into a new market, or like you said earlier, putting yourself out there and asking for someone's business, or making offers to work with people and having that fear of rejection there. So there is that sort of element, but that could be, universal across a lot of humans. It depends on whether you naturally would consider yourself a risk averse person or not. I myself don't consider myself a risk taking person. I actually consider myself quite risk averse, and yet somehow, some way, I've grown this business. So it's not that it can't be done. It's just something that I was very mindful of, with the way that I was used to operating in the corporate space. And I think funny story, when I first, got started in my business, was I remember sitting there at the computer, and it was like 5 o'clock, and I'm thinking and looking at my watch, and I'm like, oh, it's, time to finish work. It's home time. And then I'm looking around, and I'm like, I'm the only one in my office. Like, I definitely could have finished earlier if I wanted to, or, there was no person there telling me what to do. And so I think that's a kind of, different shift, is that you're always kind of thinking of others and fitting in with others when you're in a HR role. And when you're in the entrepreneurship space, you really have to lead yourself, and you have to do that without others around you as well.
Yes, you have to lead yourself, and you have to motivate yourself, which can be two different things. And yes. Thank you for that, Amy. So insightful. And it brings to mind a conversation that I had here on this podcast with another leader. And this person was talking about that inevitable hand holding that happens in HR. Your one hand is holding the company's hand, and then the other hand is holding the employee's hand. And I'm curious, this person's position was that it's not a position of success, and that you can't hold both people's hands and expect to succeed. And I'm curious if you agree with that or disagree with that statement, opinion.
Well, it's hard, right? It's like, do you have a favorite child or not? How do you answer that question?
Exactly.
if you were my mother, you'd put us to bed every night, and then there was three of us growing up, and you'd put us to bed every night, and you'd tell each child as you were going to sleep that you were my favorite of the day. And so that was the trick that my mum used to play with us. But no, jokes aside, I think it can be quite difficult to have, competing priorities and competing interests. But I think that's the whole point of things. And I don't think that's any different than how we operate in different worlds where we've got different stakeholders that always have, you know, something to gain or something to lose out of different situations. And I think even when you evolve your own business, having those strengths and having to know how to manage and navigate certain relationships and stakeholder management like that is actually really advantageous because, you know, when you're in your own business, you'll have the different kind of pulls in your business where, you know, you need to be focusing on business development and growing the business and your attention needs to go to new people that you want to bring into your world. But then you'll also have your clients that you're supporting and you want to make sure that they're happy and you want to make sure that you're delivering and then they're staying with you for a very long time. And so I think, you know, having those skills of trying to be in the middle and solving different challenges at the same time is something that's really advantageous when you head into business because nothing kind of happens, you know, in a perfect order or there's no sort of perfect way of running the business. Everything, you know, in our in-demand coach tribe, we always aim for 80% perfection. And so it's kind of like if it's 80% perfect, we get it out there and we get it done, right? And so I think that's a similar thing. You can only do your best and you're never going to be able to please everyone around you. And so it's just around how you really manage those relationships, how you show up within those relationships as well, and the integrity that you have in how you're really going about your business and your day.
Absolutely. And I personally call that bridge building. And I agree with you, Amy. I do think that it's something that is such a crucial skill to not just have, but also to continuously cultivate, especially in a global context like the one that we're in now, where we're undergoing so much revolution and change in the realm of work, but also elsewhere. And I think it's just so essential. And I'm thinking from the context of a US citizen currently in a very hyper-polarized type of mood. So the ability to draw people together whenever possible, I agree with you. I think that's a skill. And number two, I think your mother is infinitely wise and I would like to take lessons from her. I think there's a lot to be learned in that approach. And, you know, it's interesting too, because there's an aspect of HR that some people have commented on in terms of gender and how gender and sexuality play into this, for lack of a better word, caretaker type of role that some HR spaces have evolved into. Do you have any thoughts in terms of the nature of gender in an HR role, whether that's, you know, in 1960 or in present day 2023?
Yeah, I think it's no different to gender in many other different roles as well. You know, we typically don't see a lot of, you know, female bricklayers, for example, or, you know, people doing, you know, heavy labor work all day long. And so I think people tend to gravitate, no matter what gender they are, they tend to gravitate towards their strengths and where they really like to play. And so for me, I always sort of bring it back to the people element. I think, you know, whichever gender you are, if you are passionate about people, that tends to really be a draw card for HR. And that tends to be, you know, where a lot of the, I hate the word soft skills because I don't think they're soft or easy at all. But I think, you know, a lot of people that tend to have more of those soft skills, if you like, as we sort of traditionally know them, you know, a strong communication, things of that nature, I think they're the things that really kind of draw people in to HR. And so that's kind of the way that I've always seen it, is that people that have a tendency towards, you know, numbers and analytics. And I know for me, that was definitely not my forte. And then you've got people that have that natural proclivity as well. And then they will head into, you know, typically engineering careers or accounting careers and all sorts of things as well. So I think it just depends on our strengths, the way that we're wired. And I think you can definitely be successful in the role no matter your gender.
Absolutely. I agree with you there. And again, I'm so tempted to go off in a direction talking about the different responsibilities and tasks that have somehow ended up in HR, because it's interesting for a profession that is supposed to be about human beings. all of a sudden we become also a benefits analyst and a payroll administrator, depending on your organization and what your workflow is. So tempted to go there, but I'm going to head in a different direction instead, because one of the highlights that I noticed in listening to some of your guest appearances on other podcasts and online resources, I hear this refrain from you in media about your focus on millennials and Gen Z. Can you tell me a little bit more about that focus? And as an asterisk to that, I want to also ask you about a generation that I don't belong to, which is Gen X. And if you consider that in tandem when you're working with people that are millennials and in Gen Z.
Yeah. Well, this was interesting, right? Because again, it was kind of a space that I fell into when I first started my business was, you know, I was working with a lot of CEOs who were in the baby boomer generation predominantly. And I remember just being in these sort of boardroom conversations, and I would overhear some of the things that they were struggling with, you know, with some of their talent. And, you know, typically those talent would be like a millennial or a Gen Z, you know, employee. And I find it really interesting that we have up to 5 different generations in the workforce right now. So that throws up a whole set of new challenges for people. And it's kind of, you know, a period of time where we have that, where we haven't really had that before, which is really interesting. And I remember hearing all of these different conversations. And in my mind, you know, being a millennial myself, a lot of the answers were quite obvious to me. And it was very surprising that a lot of the answers weren't as obvious to some of the baby boomer leaders that I was working with. And so they naturally just started to ask me, you know, some questions around things. And I was just sort of sharing, you know, my thoughts around how I like to operate. And I think, you know, one of the things that millennials really value in the workplace is feedback and being able to have that flexible work-life balance as well. And, you know, we can talk all day long about different generations and why that is and the way that we grew up, but I think it all kind of, you know, shapes us into how we operate in the workforce and what our values are and our beliefs. And so, you know, I say all that to say that there's this recognition that needs to happen sometimes that there are little nuances. I think a lot of the time we kind of blanket everyone into the same bucket where there are different nuances to be aware of, you know, in the workplace, and that millennials and Gen Zs have a lot of value to bring to the workplace too. I think a lot of people still treat them as just the young people in the office rather than looking at, you know, the digital skills and the things that they have to really bring to the table. And so that's sort of one of the things that I was doing, you know, predominantly as a speaker, was really sort of helping a lot of organizations to see some of those things. So yeah, that was a very interesting space to play in. Not so much there anymore, but definitely interesting.
Wow. I mean, thank you. What a wealth of information. And I'm sure there's a treasure trove that lies just beyond those statements. It's such an intriguing topic. And for me, just to close the conversation a bit on this note, I'm a card-carrying millennial. That's one of my favorite phrases. I'm a card-carrying millennial that tends to think like a boomer. And the reason for that is because I was raised off of limited TV channels. So there was only Telenueva, and I don't speak Spanish very well, or there was TV Land. So my pop culture sensibilities were, you know, really arranged around 1950s television, as well as the King James version of the Bible. So I'm a little outdated in some of my reference points there. And it's interesting because having this interesting selective identity of half boomer, half millennial, one of the things I think about, because they seem to be so diametrically opposed sometimes, is like, where is Gen X?
That's right. I'm always mentioned Gen X. That's the forgotten generation.
I think that's deliberate. And here in the US, I've heard Gen X be referred to as the silent generation. And this morning, my mother, you reminded me of my mother, so I'll talk about my mother too. I told her just this morning, I said, Mom, this is why people in Gen X really need to speak up. We were talking about what we call here in the United States, Gold Star families, which are families that have lost either a son or a daughter, a child as a result of war. And I was telling my mom about this story I had heard about a Gold Star family, and she was so distraught hearing it. She didn't know the information I was giving her. And I told her, Mom, this is why people in your generation have to speak up, because we need a tiebreaker, so to speak. But to bring this conversation to a close, I want to emphasize and underscore how special and amazing Amy is in terms of being a bridge builder, being someone who thinks from so many different contexts, from the HR context, from the coaching context, from a generational context. And I would really encourage anyone listening to connect with Amy on LinkedIn, find out more about her and what she does. And she might just be that person that you connect with that can really help you accelerate your business success. So Amy, thank you so much for being on Higher Intelligence today. And we hope to have you back again soon for another episode.
You're so welcome. Thanks for a great conversation.
Recognizing diverse perspectives is crucial for thriving organizations. Each generation, boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, bring unique strengths that enhance collaboration and enrich workplace culture. The key is to get to know the individuals behind these labels. Imagine your team leveraging the varied experiences and insights of all members. By fostering open communication and valuing every voice, you create an environment that drives exceptional results. Collaboration across generations, cultures, and backgrounds leads to a more inclusive and effective workplace. Platforms like LinkedIn show us how storytelling and personal brand connect us beyond generational lines. They enable us to share our journeys and break down barriers. Remember, no one is a monolith. Each person has their own story, and understanding these stories can unlock new possibilities for collaboration. Welcoming this diversity sparks innovation. Younger generations bring fresh perspectives that inspire creativity, while older generations enhance adaptability and problem solving. Addressing these differences is essential for effective leadership and building a thriving team. Thank you for joining us on Higher Intelligence. As we shift our thinking, let's remember that no one is a monolith. Take the time to get to know someone. The key to success often lies in one person believing in you. Give others that chance while maintaining appropriate boundaries, and watch how it transforms your culture. This has been Higher Intelligence, a podcast presented by My Working Soul. Thanks for joining us. Learn more about My Working Soul at myworkingsoul.com, and don't miss an episode. Subscribe to the show on YouTube and follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook.